You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Happy Friday to you. We appreciate you being with us. Lots to get to today on our podcast. We're going to have Jacob Rudner from Baseball America a little bit later. We're going to talk about some new proposals that have come out of the American Baseball Coaches Association convention this week. Also, Anthony Christensen will join us from Knoxville, where Arkansas gets ready to take on number one ranked Tennessee tomorrow. Big basketball game in the SEC opener for the Razorbacks. Christina Long will be in studio with me as well. But first, we'll go to Anthony, who flew over to Tennessee this morning. Anthony had a late night last night covering women's basketball at Bud Walton Arena and then jumped on an early plane to get to Knoxville for this game tomorrow. Anthony, let's start with just the feeling. I mean, basketball is different than covering in football. You know, you fly into a football or you fly into a town on a football weekend and there's this buzz in the air. Basketball can be a little bit different. Maybe there's the anticipation level is not as high, but when you've got a number one ranked team like Tennessee, you've got a team that's ranked in Arkansas, you've got the Calipari angle, obviously his first SEC game with the Razorbacks. I wonder, as you got in there this morning, just what was the feeling in town?
It's still a little hard to say just because I've only slept 2 hours. I slept on the plane. So I had a layover in Charlotte. I slept on the flight over there. I slept a little bit on the 45-minute flight from Charlotte to here. But, we're recovering. But no, I mean, I think it's good. I think people are excited. Obviously Jonas Adu is going to be back as well. Having played at Tennessee the whole rest of his college career and now at Arkansas. So I mean, that adds another element to it. Obviously John Calipari and Rick Barnes have, had a lot of battles over the years. I know they've got great respect for one another. And it's a ranked, top 25 game with one of the teams being the home team being the number one ranked team in the country. So I certainly think, people are excited, walking around, Knoxville just briefly, you see your people in, Tennessee gear, saw a bunch of people wearing Tennessee gear in the airport. So I think some people maybe, came back home for this game maybe. But it'll be a fun one. I think people are excited for it for sure.
Tennessee is undefeated. You don't see a whole lot of undefeated teams this time of year. And it's not like they played, a Rick's Bakery schedule. I mean, this is a really good team. They've been tested. What makes them so good?
I mean, they've got a lot of experience, obviously. I mean, you got Zakai Ziegler, running the point, and he's been around forever. When you look at the guys they brought in as well, I mean, Chaz Lanier, he's – maybe not the front runner for it, but he's certainly, an All-American level player at this moment in time. I mean, he takes a bunch of their shots. I think he takes about 36% of their shots and really has kind of stepped into, I don't want to say the Dalton Connect role just because they are different players, mm-hmm. But he's definitely their offensive kind of focal point. He's the guy they want taking those shots. And he's really excelled in that role and has really kind of adapted well coming over from North Florida. But I think the big thing is, I think that continuity that they have. I mean, like I mentioned, Zakai Ziegler. I mean, they also got, Jordan Gainey coming back, Jamai Meshack, guys like that, who have played together. And I mean, they're old and they've gotten old for, a good chunk of this team. They've gotten old together. So they're used to playing with each other. And I mean, that's kind of the recipe of winning in modern college basketball, right? Being old and staying old and getting old together, I guess. That's just kind of the surface level to it. You look at like all of their raw numbers. I mean, their defense, they don't allow the three-pointer like at all. I think they're top rated three-point defense in the country. Second rated defense overall. And then obviously their offense really good too. Like I mentioned with Chaz Lanier. So when you look, when you combine all of those and, as Tennessee has, you get a very good basketball team.
You talked to Kenny Payne, the Arkansas assistant coach yesterday. He gave some updates on Jonas Adu and on Nellie Davis. Both are, I guess, expected to make the trip. Adu, it sounds like he's doing better. Davis, maybe kind of wait and see mode. I mean, is that fair to say?
I would say so. With something like with what John L. Davis has, the wrist soreness and whatnot, I don't ever really expect coaches to be like, 100% he's playing or 100% he's not playing, just because from my experience, coaches just like to have that little bit of uncertainty going into games to keep the opposition guessing. So I'm not surprised they haven't, come out and said, definitively yes or no, he's playing. I would fully expect Jonas Adu to be available. I know both of them have been in practice, Kenny Payne said. So if nothing else, I mean, they're working towards it. I would be stunned if Jonas Adu doesn't play. Not just because of, obviously it being an emotional game going back to Tennessee, but also just because, I mean, he did play in that game against Oakland. Not very much, but he did play. And I'm sure he's gotten, some time to recover and all of that. So I'd fully expect him to play. John L. Davis, I think, is still a little bit up in the air, as you said, just because, I mean, it is a little bit tough to say just because he has missed the last two games. And as this coaching staff has kind of, I guess, kind of been since they've gotten in, they don't give a lot of information on injuries. But the SEC availability report will come out, I think, later today, and maybe we'll get some more stuff out of that. But I would lean on saying yes, Adu will play, and then maybe Donnell Davis will play.
One of the things that's striking to me about these two teams, Anthony, is that when you get into, like, so when you have a conference opener like this, you might have some common opponents, but a lot of times it's mid-major teams. And these two teams have got three common opponents this year, and they're all high major teams. They both played Baylor, they both played Illinois, and they both played Miami. Tennessee, obviously undefeated in those games. Arkansas went 1-2. I wonder how much you think that might help in the preparation, if at all, for these two teams. The fact that, not only have they played a lot of the similar teams, but it's been, pretty high competition for the most part.
Yeah, I think there's certainly something to that, right? I mean, you can see, in Arkansas's case, what did Miami do against Illinois that worked? Or vice versa, what did Illinois do against, Tennessee, that worked? I think I said, what did Miami do against Illinois? What did Tennessee do? That's
We
the
knew what
2 hours
you
of sleep talking. what did Tennessee do against Illinois that worked? What didn't work? What did they do against Miami that worked? Et cetera, et cetera. And then also, looking back at the games that they played, what did Miami do that hurt Arkansas? What did Illinois do that hurt Arkansas that, Tennessee can maybe try to take advantage of? I mean, when you look at that Illinois game, obviously Arkansas's 3-point defense is going to be the thing that sticks out. And when, Tennessee's got a guy like Chaz Lanier, who is, playing as well as anybody offensively and shooting the ball, you would expect that to be, something that they maybe highlight. Just, kind of seeing how these teams, performed against, those common opponents, not just, common opponent by games or anything like that, but, high major opponents, in Tennessee doing it on the road against Illinois as well, in a true road game. So yeah, I there's certainly stuff that goes into that, I think. Obviously I'm not in the room scouting with these guys or anything, but I would definitely think that they've probably honed in on those games just to, I guess, see just like on a similar level, similar playing field, what the other teams, did to have success against Tennessee and vice versa.
In addition to those three teams that we mentioned, Tennessee, they played six Power Five teams. We say Power Five in basketball because of the Big East, but they played six Power Five teams. Louisville beat them early in the season by 22 on the road, beat Virginia, beat Baylor in the Bahamas, Syracuse, Miami, and Illinois. They've won all those games. Illinois, the closest game that Tennessee's played. The Vols won that one with a buzzer beater at the end. I believe that game was on the road. Yeah, it was at Illinois. They also played Indiana in the preseason, lost to Indiana in a preseason exhibition game, but obviously that doesn't count toward their record. Arkansas has only played one road game this year, Anthony. They played at Miami in the SEC-ACC Challenge. That's kind of, I mean, that's what Calipari does. That's his schedule, is that they don't go on the road a whole lot in the non-conference. And in this case, I don't know that they would have gone on the road at all had the SEC, conference office said, or ESPN or whoever puts that thing together, had they not said, you've got to go play this game at Miami. So I wonder how you think they're going to handle this atmosphere tomorrow, because I'm sure, I know they've downsized Thompson Bowling Arena a little bit. It was the largest arena in the SEC, and it still may be. They downsized it a little bit, but the point is it's going to be a pretty hostile environment that they're going into that they probably didn't see in Coral Gables a month ago.
No, they did not. No disrespect to the Coral Gables atmosphere, but I don't think it's going to be, or I don't think that is what they're going to see at Tennessee tomorrow. I think they'll handle it, you know, relatively well. I mean, you've got, you know, experienced guys in this team. Obviously, they've got Jonas Adu, who called Thompson Bowling home for 4 years. You've got, you know, Jonas, or not Jonas, Adu Thiro, and Zvonimir Ivicic, and you know, all those guys who have the experience, you know, at this level, who've played in environments like that. So I think, you know, that's why you bring in guys who have that experience. That's why you bring in the guys who followed John Calipari from Kentucky, because you want to have that experience. You want to have that experience on the road in the SEC, for moments like this. So you would expect them to handle it, you know, relatively well. Obviously, you know, winning on the road, especially in conference play, is hard. I think everybody is kind of seeing that. I mean, you saw a really good Maryland team lose to a, you know, Washington team that I don't think is that good last night on the road. Drake going to UIC and losing despite going into that game, you know, undefeated, to throw in a little mid-major reference for everybody. But, you know, obviously it's a tough environment. And it will be, but this is why you bring in guys who are experienced. So it'll be a fun one for sure. I think it'll be really interesting to see how, you know, those freshman rotation players, you know, Boogie Flam, Billy Richmond, Carter Knox, how they handle it, because they haven't really had a true road environment that was really that hostile. I no disrespect to that Miami crowd, but it wasn't a full Thompson Bowling Arena like they're going to see tomorrow. So I think that'll be an interesting one, especially to see how Boogie Flam deals with that, just kind of being the offensive general they have.
I want to tell you, can get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com, most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports. We've got an award-winning team of reporters and photographers that bring subscribers the most trusted Razorback news, analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. Your subscriptions allow us to do things like send Anthony and our photographer Hank Layton to Knoxville for this game. Anthony and Hank, we've already approved them to go to every Razorback road game this year, and so we appreciate your support of our website. I want to tell you, too, you can find our podcasts on Spotify or Apple. Just search Whole Hog Sports. We've got a video version of the podcast that we post at YouTube. You can search Whole Hog Sports there, and we've also posted on our Twitter and Facebook pages at Whole Hog Sports. Anthony, let's get out of here with this. What do you think the key is to tomorrow's game?
Not to be too, I guess, the talking line in these games is always guard play, right? I think the key, I guess, matchup, if you will, is going to be Boogie Flam against Zakai Ziegler. Obviously the all-star freshman, you know, potential one and done lottery pick level guy going up against, you know, the guy who's been in college forever, who's experienced and knows what he's doing at this level. I think that is kind of the key matchup, and also how Arkansas defends Chaz Lanier, particularly on the perimeter, I think will be, I guess, two of the main things to watch, but I'm definitely looking at that, Boogie Flam, Zakai Ziegler matchup, for sure.
Anthony, enjoy your trip.
I'll do my best. Might try to take a nap here in a little bit, because I did not sleep between the women's game last night and my flight. So we're struggling over here, but we're good.
We'll get some rest. We'll see you. We'll see you tomorrow. Anthony Christensen, who covers Razorback basketball for WholeHogSports.com. When we come back, Christina Long will join me. We'll talk a little bit more about this Arkansas-Tennessee game. We'll talk about that women's basketball game last night, the playoff, and Jacob Rudner from Baseball America still coming up. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and Shopcart Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kindle King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers, Arkansas, and Tennessee. Tip off tomorrow at noon over in Knoxville. Carl Ravitch and Jimmy Dykes will be on the call on ESPN. Kenny Payne, Arkansas's assistant coach, the former Louisville head coach, previewed the game yesterday and had this to say about the Volunteers.
The toughest teams in the country. One of the best offensive teams in the country. They run their stuff hard. They take good shots. They got good scoring. They got great rebounding, great length. And they got a floor general on the floor that controls the game. Very good team. You can see why they're number one in the country.
So Kenny Payne on Tennessee. When you get a chance to go play a number one team on their home floor, I think that there's like an appropriate amount of angst about it, but then there's also, I think, a lot of excitement. I'm excited to see how this Arkansas team is going to react to this type of opponent, because no offense to Illinois or Baylor or anybody, they haven't played anybody like Tennessee this year.
No, definitely not. And I mean, what a way to start your conference slate, right? I mean, they're not going to catch a break in the SEC really all season. I mean, we've talked so much on this show with Anthony about how strong the SEC is, and coaches all over the league are talking about it. You truly don't catch a break. But what a way to start it with Tennessee on the road.
And the Calipari angle here too, Arkansas, they have been a good program for, you know, 4 or 5 years. They've been relevant because of the success that Musselman had in the tournament, but they've never really been hated, I feel like. And Calipari, he brings it out of, you know, the opposing fan bases. And so, you know, and I know that Brazil's the only one who's been on the team previously, so it probably isn't going to be that new of a deal for the players who were at Kentucky last year who have come over here with them. You know, certainly the coaching staff is going to be used to this. But I think for the fans, maybe that dislike is going to come through the TV a little bit more than they're used to seeing.
That's a really good point that I hadn't thought about yet, as far as all the things we've talked about since Cal has been here. I hadn't thought about that at all. But yeah, I feel like that's a really good point, where being the villain has not been the case. And I think, you know, I think a lot of people didn't like Musselman, but I think they, on the outside, I mean, like outside of Arkansas fandom across college basketball, I think
he's one of those guys where if he's your jerk,
yes,
you love him.
Exactly.
And if he's
but
their
I don't
jerk,
think,
you don't
I don't
like
think
him.
He was like hated. I think people just thought he was annoying more so, you know?
I think a lot of people didn't like
really?
Him.
Really?
I do. Yeah.
I guess I don't feel like it was the same vibe as the way people hate Calipari though, right?
I think with Musselman, it's like they didn't like how he acted. With Calipari,
yeah,
they're envious of the success, and,
yes,
and probably some
and
of the
some
antics.
Of the acting, yeah. Yes, and some of the personality. But yeah, I mean, exactly. I think it's when it's on your side, it's totally different. You know, you keep seeing people wearing that T-shirt that says like "I've always hated Cal," and it's crossed out with "hated" and said "loved," and it's an Arkansas shirt. I see people on TV wearing that shirt like all the time, and that's exactly like that sums it up.
Rick Barnes, you're not going to find a whole lot of people who say a negative thing about him. One of the most well-respected coaches in the industry at Tennessee. Boy, he's been there a long time. I mean, it just seems like yesterday that he left Texas for Tennessee, but he's really built a solid program over there in Knoxville. We'll play a couple of sound bites from here. The first one is about Jonas Adu, who spent a few years at Tennessee, now at Arkansas, about his return to Knoxville this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we appreciate what Jonas did for while we were here, but you all know the landscape of where we are in intercollegiate athletics, and you're going to see more of that, obviously, as time goes on, when, you know, guys leave and go other places for various reasons sometimes. But Jonas, really, we loved him when he was here and what he did, and loved his growth. But, you know, he's there, we're here, and it's about competition now.
Adu, I felt with him, he is the key to this Arkansas team moving forward throughout the SEC play. He didn't feel well the other night. He was sick, only played 16 minutes in that game. And so you kind of, you know, you push that, you know, whatever performance that he had. I think he had 6 points, 4 rebounds, something like that night. You push that one aside. I go back to the 3 games before that where, you know, it was double-figure points. It was a high rebound total. He had a double-double against A&T on December 21st. He feels like the key to this basketball team reaching their potential along with getting everybody else healthy.
Definitely, yeah. And he's been a fun, you know, guy to watch and to kind of consider as they've been kind of figuring out what they have. I mean, I think, you know, before the season, I remember I think I was on Pigtrail Nation or something, and they asked me about, you know, what I was most interested to watch. And for me, it was him and how they were going to use him, because I remembered when he came and played at Arkansas last year. And I think I wrote a story. I went to Rick Barnes's post-game press conference and talked to him a bunch about Jonas, because Jonas had such a big performance against Arkansas. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so he had always stood out to me just from that. And then he ends up here. And so, you know, I think you're right that he will unlock a lot for them. I think one thing, you know, Corey, my boyfriend's a huge basketball fan, and he talked about how he doesn't think that he went to one of their first few games, and he was like, I don't remember an Arkansas player that looked that big. Like, I don't remember having an Arkansas player on the floor that looked like that.
There's this old line that everybody loves to repeat when Arkansas isn't playing well. And it's from the 91 UNLV game when Larry Johnson tells Nolan, you got to go get yourself some men. You know, and when Jonas Adu committed, it's like they got themselves a man.
Yeah.
Adu Thero, they got themselves a man. Like, they just look different than a lot of the Arkansas players have looked in the past. That's a great point, because I had the same thought. I mean, he's got the look of a true power big man that, you know, even Portis and Gafford, I don't know that they looked like him.
Yeah.
You probably have to go back to some of, Stan Heath's teams or the early teams under John Pelfrey when they had guys like Darian Towns that I feel like look like Jonas Adu. Maybe I'm missing somebody, but that's just, you know, going off the top of my head. That's the last type of, they had Stephen Hill during those years. They had some real strong, you know, post play that I don't, you know, think they've had since then. You know, on Barnes, he's had success everywhere he's been, just like Calipari. He was at Providence. He was at Clemson. Was at Texas. Was at Tennessee. Kind of in a similar boat with Calipari in the fact that now the team that he used to coach is in the same conference with him, you know, Texas here. But he didn't go from Texas to Tennessee, you know, within the conference. It took some realignment to make that happen. This is what he had to say, though, about Calipari being in his first year at Arkansas and maybe whether or not it compared at all to the first year that he spent in Knoxville.
Many years,
you know, I mean, obviously it's always new when you go somewhere else, because it takes you a while to realize, you know, what he'd spent many, many years in Lexington, and you go somewhere just like 17 years at Texas for me, you come here, but what happens, you get so into the job, you know, where your life in terms of the way you do things doesn't change, you're just in a different environment. And obviously, you know, he went from one great fan base to another fan base, great fan base. And he, you know, watching his team, I mean, he's always been a great basketball coach everywhere he's been. It doesn't matter where he goes. He turns things around quickly. They win games. And his teams are always so fundamentally sound. And you don't have to beat them. They're not going to beat themselves. I'm sure he's still making some adjustments, he and his family personally, but basketball-wise, you look at what he's done, pretty much the same.
A lot of respect, I think, between Rick Barnes and John Calipari. You could see it when Tennessee and Kentucky would play in previous years, and I think you're going to see that tomorrow when the Razorbacks and the Volunteers get together. I guess it's going to be a noon tip-off on ESPN, and I hope you'll come to our website, wholehogsports.com, to read all of Anthony's coverage from over in Knoxville. Playoff concluded yesterday, or the quarterfinal round did. Notre Dame beat Georgia pretty soundly.
Yeah.
And I don't know that the result surprised me a whole lot, because, you know, with Georgia, they've got a freshman quarterback. They've been able to run the ball all year. And so they had nothing really to take the pressure off of Gunnar Stockton. And, you know, Notre Dame's a good enough team that they can win that type of game. Their defense is really good. And then Georgia gifted them some points with the fumble right before halftime and then the kickoff return at the start of the second half. I don't know that I've ever seen a team score 17 points in the span of 54 seconds of game time like Notre Dame did in that game yesterday.
That was crazy. And they had to take advantage of those opportunities or create those opportunities. Some of those weren't even things that Georgia presented to them. There was Notre Dame going and taking it. And they had to do that because offensively it wasn't going tremendously well for Notre Dame. I think Stockton comported himself better than I thought he would. I didn't really know what we would see out of him in that game, but I think especially early he did a lot better than I would have expected for a freshman in that spot and for somebody with, you know, as little experience as he had. But yeah, so I think it was better than I expected, but the result was not necessarily surprising to me.
You know, Kirby Smart was upset. He said that Notre Dame did something illegal to get that offside penalty, mm-hmm. where they ran the punt team out, then they ran the offense back on, and there was a lot of confusion there. But the point, I mean, I think the bottom line is that Notre Dame just made the plays down the stretch to win the game. They outsmarted Georgia, I think, in that situation. And then Riley Leonard, you know, looking like John Elway running, on the third down. I mean, it felt like Notre Dame wanted the game more than Georgia did.
Yeah, which is something that I feel like you haven't really been able to say. I mean, A, Georgia hasn't lost that many games over the last few years, but I just feel like that hasn't really been a problem for them in recent years.
I feel like our expectations or maybe our mindsets are having to be reset a little bit with Nick Saban leaving, you know, with the 12-team college football playoff, with NIL and transfers and how that has just changed the landscape of everything, because now everything is just a lot more even than it's been in the past. So, you know, it's like, I think a lot of people thought Alabama should be in the playoff because they're Alabama and because of what Alabama's done in the past, not so much about what Alabama did this year. I think if you watched Alabama this year and you see the game that they played against Oklahoma, you're saying, well, where's that? You know, like, that's not a playoff team.
Right.
There's a difference between how Alabama looked against Oklahoma and how Ohio State looked against Michigan. Mm-hmm. And I think Michigan has proven itself to be a worthy team, even though they didn't have the season that they really wanted. I think that's still not a bad team. And so, you know, I think we're just having to reset our expectations. But I will say this. There's been a lot of talk in the last, you know, however many hours since that game ended about the SEC is just not what people say it is. I actually think it's the opposite. I think the SEC is really deep. I think it's still the best conference in football. It's just there's not that one dominant team. I think there have been years where the SEC hasn't been as good as it was this year. But, you know, you've got Georgia and Alabama who are head and shoulders above everybody else, and they play in the championship game. And so nobody talks about the SEC not being as good because you've got these two, you know, that are carrying the water playing in the championship game. But, you know, Arkansas beat Tennessee. Kentucky, they beat Ole Miss, and they nearly beat Georgia. Vanderbilt beat Alabama. Oklahoma beat Alabama. Those are four of the bottom feeder teams in the conference. Three of those were 6-6 teams. Those are four of the bottom teams in the conference that beat four of the top teams in the conference and nearly beat a fifth. You don't see that in the ACC. You don't see that in the Big 12. You don't even see that in the Big 10. I mean, you know, Purdue wasn't threatening Ohio State this year. And so I think that's what sets the conference apart. It's just the fact that there wasn't that dominant team, I think, is easy to, you know, parrot this narrative that the SEC is just not as good. I don't think that's true. I think the SEC is very good. Texas could still win them a national championship. I don't think it's a given that Ohio State's going to beat Texas down in Arlington. That's going to be a home game for the Longhorns. I don't know if they're going to win it, but I think they could. I think any of these four teams left could win the national championship. I don't see this team that's just head and shoulders above the rest right now. So I think the SEC probably – I really hate basing your opinion on the conference over – the course of what happens now in the playoff and what happens in the bowl games. Bowl games should not count toward this because it's a shell of the teams.
Yeah.
I mean, think about Arkansas and Texas Tech. Those weren't the teams that deserved to be at the Liberty Bowl. It's just what was left of them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, let's just pump the brakes a little bit and quit trying to, you know, form an opinion on every conference based on what's happening in the postseason.
But if I don't form an opinion, I can't tweet about it.
Well, I just tweet stories.
I do too. I don't actually do takes.
I'm not a big tweeter. But, you know, I think the SEC is I think it's a good conference this year. I was thinking about it last night. Georgia and Tennessee going into the playoff, I didn't have any faith in either of those two teams to win a championship because both of them have had a lot of offensive issues, and then Georgia went into it without their quarterback,
yeah.
who even Carson Beck had been a liability.
Right.
And, you know, with Texas, I think Texas, by the end of the regular season, I had come around to the idea that Texas was the best all-around team in the SEC. Defensively, they're probably the best defense in the SEC. They're top two, three offensively. Ole Miss, I would say, is probably the most talented team in the SEC this year, but they just lacked any kind of consistency. And to me, that's a coaching issue. The fact that you can't get that roster up to play Kentucky and Florida, and yet you can look like world beaters when you play, you know, some of the other top teams. And so it's just a weird year in the league. And we'll see if Texas can win them a national championship. I don't know if they will. But I don't think the SEC is as down as some people think it was. I just think it was a lot more even. And I think the portal and NIL and everything has had a lot to do with leveling that playing field.
Yeah, definitely. And we talked about how all year about how it felt like there was no one dominant team in college football. And I think that's because while the SEC was, and I don't want to say down, but while the SEC didn't present that dominant team, that just untouchable team, mm-hmm. no other team stepped up to be untouchable. Even though, you know, Oregon didn't lose, whatever, but they still never felt, I don't think anybody felt like Oregon was just far and away the greatest team in the year. They had issues.
I mean, they nearly lost to an FCS team to start out. Didn't play Boise well, had a scare against Wisconsin, could have lost to Ohio State in the regular season. There wasn't a dominant team this year. And I think that's good for college football, the fact that you've got all these teams now that feel like they could potentially win a championship. I don't think that's a bad thing at all. When we come back, Jacob Rudner from Baseball America is going to join us to talk about what's going on over at the ABCA this week. But first, a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. I want to tell you about our friends at Bentonville Glass. They've been serving their community since 1971, committed, professional, versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, look no further than Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs with the highest quality products. You can come by and see them right now at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. The American Baseball Coaches Association Convention is going on this week in our nation's capital in Washington, D.C. Jacob Rudner of Baseball America is there, and he joins us now. Jacob, you know, sometimes these ABCA conventions, there's not really a whole lot that comes out of them news-wise. It feels like this has been a pretty newsworthy week.
Yeah, I would say that that's a safe assessment of this week. And it's interesting, too, because this is not a rules year for college baseball. So typically you see a lot of the action in years where there are going to be rule adjustments immediately following. And we are not in one of those cycles right now. However, as is pretty clear, college sports are in a major transitional period. And that has been kind of the theme here in Washington, D.C. so far. A lot of conversation about how the NCAA and baseball in particular are going to proceed under the new rules. And with revenue sharing, we will see rosters trimmed down to a size of 34. Teams are going to have to make cuts to get down to that 34 by December 1st, which poses a new challenge with no mid-year transferring in college baseball. And that's kind of been at the center of all of the conversations, especially last night at the D1 meeting. That again was the focus.
You know, there's been some, and I've talked to Dave Van Horn a lot about this, that, you know, one of the concerns that I think coaches have is that, and one of the big questions that remains really to be answered is, do they go into the fall with 34 players, or do they go into the season with 34 players? And based on what you wrote this morning at baseballamerica.com, it looks like they're going to, the coaches are going to propose to the conference commissioners to have a starting fall roster of 38 and then cut that down to 34. Is that accurate?
That's correct. And that was the agreement that the coaches who were in attendance last night came to. They decided basically that 34 was too few. It left their rosters in a vulnerable position if there were going to be season-ending injuries in the fall, which we've seen increase over the last couple of years, especially on the pitching side. Mm-hmm. And they feel as though anything over 38 is going to be an increased risk to open themselves up for lawsuit, to put student athletes in a position where they may not be able to transfer and play right away, which would disadvantage the student. And so they decided last night that 38 would be a good starting point. Just in terms of being able to go to the commissioners and say, hey, here's our proposal. This is what we're thinking. And they feel as though that is the best middle ground. Does it leave the door open a little bit still to these potential lawsuits from a student athlete who is cut, partway through the academic calendar on December 1st? It does. And that was part of the conversation last night. Certainly, there was a lot of discussion about, well, what happens when a disgruntled student or parent take us to court? And that was a concern. But, the prevailing argument last night was really that rosters will not be able to survive at the 34 if that's where they start in the fall. Teams are going to need to have some cushion for the regular season. And there are a lot of coaches who believe that they won't have to make a ton of cuts because you can count on, two, three, four guys to suffer some sort of an injury or need mm-hmm. to redshirt for whatever reason academically that will allow them to not make a cut at all and just naturally trim down to 34.
And just for the listeners, just so you understand, if maybe you don't follow all the ins and outs of baseball, the way it is right now is that since the COVID, the rosters were expanded post-COVID, the teams have been able to handle, or they've been able to have 40 players on their regular season roster. Arkansas, for example, in this last fall, had 51 players on the fall roster. 9 of those players ended up going elsewhere at semester, so to leave them with 42, one is injured, so he'll redshirt, and they've got to find one more player to redshirt to get down to 40. So this is a really drastic change from a roster standpoint in college baseball, and as Jacob said, it really has the coaches concerned, I think, from an injury standpoint. Think back a couple of years on Arkansas's team. What happens if they have a 34-man roster and they have the rash of injuries that they had, during the fall and the season combined? There's no doubt that that team, does not win the SEC the way it did. Jacob, one of the other things that I think is interesting that you reported on this week, it looks like we're going to have a 5-week run-up to the season as opposed to a 3-week run-up right now. So the way I read this is that right now there's a February 14th opening day. January 24th is when preseason practice starts. But if this new rule is implemented, it would be a January 10th start for preseason practice.
That's correct. And that is a big thing that coaches and even the ABCA and administrators on the NCAA side had been pushing for in recent weeks. They really do feel as though with the increase that we've seen in injuries, Major League Baseball just recently released a report on that and how, the numbers are rising at an alarming rate in terms of arm care and being able to prepare the correct way, that increasing the run-up time to the season was critical in being able to kind of get ahead of that at the college level. And there's something to be said for shortening the gap for some teams between fall ball and springtime to be able to really kind of get the body moving in the right way to prevent injury. And so it was a pretty easy decision from what I understand. And it is expected to pass. They'll vote on it on January 15th. And the expectation is that it comes into law on August 1st of this year.
You also wrote that there's a talk about increasing the number of fall baseball exhibitions from 2 to 4. I think a lot of people would be in favor of seeing that. One of the things you wrote about recently too, Jacob, that I want to talk to you about is this Diego Pavia ruling and how it affects junior college players who are playing college baseball. We've seen already, in football where some players whose eligibility was going to run out this year, they're going to get a blanket waiver for next year. But just tell people how this affects college baseball, because there's a lot of junior college players, probably more so in baseball than any other sport.
So, it still kind of remains to be seen exactly what the impact of that is going to be. I think right now the most immediate, kind of fallout from that decision is that athletes who are competing in the 2024-25 school year are going to be able to return next year if they would have been, under expiring eligibility had they played one season in junior college. And so immediately, at least, we will see a couple at least guys return in 2026 who otherwise would not have if this ruling didn't go the way it did. That being said, I actually do not anticipate this being the system moving forward. Mm-hmm. I think the NCAA is going to try and establish some level of uniformity here by just giving a blanket 5 years to play five. And I think that that's going to kind of mask some of these problems. I believe that that is coming down the pipeline. It was something that was discussed in the D1 meeting last night. It's not official yet, but they were discussing, you know, what it would look like if you do have athletes who have 5 years and how that would impact baseball and other sports in general, for that matter. And so my expectation is that that's where we're headed. How soon that's going to happen, I'm not entirely sure, but it wouldn't surprise me if it's something that came into effect here pretty quickly.
Am I correct that we're going to see more of an MLB-style substance check from umpires this year?
Yes, you are correct in saying that. I don't know that it will be as intense and as regular and structured as it is in Major League Baseball, but we will see more of it, whereas in the past we have not seen after inning checks, reliever comes into a game. Is the umpire going out to check his, glove and hat in hand? No, we haven't seen that quite yet. I do think that we'll see some of that starting this upcoming season. It was a huge point of emphasis for the ABCA, movers and shakers, their big decision makers, came out to a group of coaches and said, listen, we think we have a problem here. There are a lot of you guys who have submitted, complaints or requests for us to make a change in this regard. There are a lot of coaches who would tell you that they feel as though they encountered numerous situations last year where guys had a little bit too much stick or tack, whatever you want to call it, going on in their hands. And it impacted the outcome of the game. And so this year, the league is going to be taking a pretty strict stance on being able to curb some of that. We're going to see some new suspension rules. And now it's managers and athletes ejected from the game. Starting pitchers are to miss 4 games and relievers 2. And so it's just a different structure now, and the league is certainly trying to crack down on how much that's occurring.
Are there other rule changes that people ought to be on the lookout for this year?
I would say that the biggest other one that we haven't discussed yet is that we will see more of this double bag at first base. That will be something that's going into effect certainly during the NCAA tournament for Division I. It will not be the case in Division II and III. But when I say double bag, I mean you're going to have your normal first base, like everybody's used to. Mm-hmm. And then directly next to it on the foul side of the line will be an orange or green bag, and that's going to be called the runner's bag. And it's exactly that. The runner will be able to maintain his lane without having to cut in and out of it. The league feels as though it's going to cut down on those interference calls that, even though they're rare, where the runner gets hit by the throw. But I think more importantly, they feel they're going to cut down on some of these collisions at first base. And so it's a safety measure. Conferences are going to be able to choose whether or not they want to use it. So I'm not sure we'll see it all the time in regular season play, but it has been decided that it will appear for every NCAA tournament game again at the D1 level.
I think it's safe to say that we'll see it at the SEC level. It was at the tournament last year, and Greg Sankey and his group, they've been right at the forefront of all of these different rule changes. It's almost like everything is the SEC is the guinea pig, and then it goes off to the NCAA level. I'm going to put you on the spot, Jacob, because I know you just replaced Teddy Cahill there. But you guys will be putting out your preseason rankings here pretty soon. Just who are some of the teams you think people ought to be looking out for?
Well, I think you need not look much further than the SEC this season. Without getting too far into it yet before our top 25 comes out, a significant portion of our top 8 teams will come from the SEC. I actually believe right now that it's all of our first 5, including Arkansas, will come out of the SEC this season. And it just speaks to the talent that exists in the conference. We just heard from Tony Vitello, here at ABCA. And one of the things that he said that I thought was really interesting was, this is a conference that you kind of can't rest in. You everybody's good, and that's certainly the case this year. But I do think that there's a very well-established top 5 in some order of Tennessee, LSU, Florida, Arkansas, and you can mix in a couple other teams that you're choosing, in that group as well. So it's certainly the class of college baseball, and I think that'll be reflected in our preseason rankings for sure.
Jacob, we appreciate your time. You've been generous with it. I know you're busy up there in Washington, and hopefully we'll see you down the road.
Yes, sir. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. Thank you. Jacob Rudner from Baseball America. Christina Long joins me now. A lot of interesting stuff there. This roster thing is really, and it's not just baseball. Everybody's got to figure out what's going on with the roster, both from scholarship distribution, because there's going to be increased scholarships that come out of this House settlement. Obviously, you know, we didn't even really touch on revenue share there. There's a lot of questions that need to be answered about revenue share. I mean, it's like a brave new world for these coaches going into the 25-26 school year. And it may seem like it's a long way off, but there are, you know, I mean, there's levels of preparation that has to go. I mean, it for the people who are in the foxhole, so to speak, I mean, it doesn't feel like it's very long at all. I feel like there's probably a real sense of urgency in those meetings.
I think there absolutely is. I mean, it's top of mind for everybody in college athletics administration of any form. One thing I think that has been interesting to me since the revenue share conversation came up, and even with NIL too, but especially now with revenue share, because that 22-ish million figure that's kind of being set as sort of the, I guess you could call it a salary cap, you know, the maximum amount that a school can pay out in revenue share. That is, and I feel like this is kind of getting lost because we so often talk about revenue share in terms of football. That's for all sports.
Yep.
Every sport is getting that. It's not football specific.
And Texas Tech, they've released their numbers.
Yes, they have.
What was it, like $15 million? I think they're going to give to football.
Yeah.
And then out of 20.5.
Mm-hmm.
And the rest is going to be distributed among everybody else.
Right. And I think something that I think has been interesting to me since this first came up is for a school like Arkansas, where you have three, you know, most schools have two revenue sports, really. It's football and men's basketball.
Mm-hmm.
Baseball at Arkansas and a lot of SEC schools. I mean, Arkansas is not alone in this. But as far as college athletics as a whole, baseball is not often a priority for most schools.
It's only got the potential to be a revenue sport at four or five.
At very few, yes. Yeah. So you are going to have, for a school like Arkansas, all three of those coaches lobbying for as big a share of the pie as they can possibly get.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're Hunter Yurecek, if you're his staff, and you have all these coaches telling you how much they think they need, and you have to figure out how to balance that, plus the other sports that need a little bit, you know, that is such a headache. And Arkansas baseball is going to need to stay at the level they're at. They're going to need, you know, a large share of that pie. So Arkansas has an even harder task than everybody else, you know, with having to manage all three of these sports.
And it's not just those three. I mean,
no.
you're gonna have your track coaches who say, hey,
exactly,
in order for us to continue to compete at, you know, the highest level nationally, we've got to be competitive with Oregon, who's doing this, with Florida, who's doing this, soccer, same thing, you know, all these softball, these sports that are, you know, right there at, you know, at or near the top nationally, they're going to be, you know, keeping a close eye on what the other teams that they're competing the closest against are doing. And so, yeah, it's one of those, you got a lot of cooks in the kitchen. I have checked, by the way, to see what Arkansas is going to do from a breakdown in terms of, you know, what does football get, what does basketball get. And I was told as of late in the 24 calendar year, none of that has been determined yet, that those discussions are still ongoing. So I'm hopeful that we'll learn something about that here in the next month or so. Those decisions have to get made because, again, it feels like it's a long way away, but it's really not that long away, especially when you think about transfer portal and you're recruiting players for next year. And so there's a lot that goes into that. But really good stuff there from Jacob Rudner from Baseball America. We appreciate him joining us. I am ready for baseball.
Oh, I know you are.
It's cold outside. I'm ready to go over to Baum and shiver and take notes out in the stands for these, you know, Friday afternoon scrimmages, Saturday. I mean, I'm ready for it.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. I'm looking forward to it.
I talked to Corey Wood late in December and wrote something on our website. But basically, from a health standpoint, it seems like they're doing pretty well. They think Colin Fisher, Hunter Dietz, Aiden Jimenez, who's transferred in from Oregon State. He had Tommy John surgery at Oregon State last year. They think all three of those are on track to be ready, if not by the season opener, shortly thereafter. I think Fisher and Dietz probably will be ready on opening weekend. With Jimenez, it may take another, you know, couple, 3 weeks before he's ready. But there's a chance that he could be ready on opening weekend too. And then with Kendall Diggs, I mean, he's ready to go. And from the labrum surgery that he had last year. So really the only player who I think is not in the conversation right now is Cooper Dossett, who had Tommy John over the summer. And he's not going to be able to play next year. But from a health standpoint, they're probably about in as good a shape as I think they could be.
Yeah, which is tremendous news for them. I mean, I know we saw last year, we've seen in the last few years, they've had some really kind of late, you know, right up until the regular season started, some guys end up having to miss some time. So having them kind of start with that optimism and start guys kind of on track is a really positive sign. I think, yeah, I'm very excited for baseball season. I know we're going to have our baseball preview of Hogs Illustrated, which was the first like full issue
I did.
We're supposed
to talk about this.
Yeah,
we got
to have a little meeting.
Right?
Yeah, that was my first issue that I, you know, really full issue that we made, that I made when we started last year, when I started this job, and it was so fun to put together. It's, you know, it's the start of a season in any sport is just such an exciting time, and I think with baseball especially, when you're covering a team that is at the elite level, it is just so much more exciting. It's really fun. I'm really looking forward to being back at Baumwalker for sure.
Breaking news from Jacob, maybe not too surprising, but that Arkansas is going to be a top five team in the Baseball America poll when it comes out. Those are typically released mid to late January, so we'll see that. I want to tell you real quick, you can stay on top of all Razorback sports with a digital subscription to the Hogs Illustrated app. Christina was just mentioning it. 20 issues a year to Hogs Illustrated magazine. It gives you complete access to all of our content at wholehogsports.com. Monthly subscriptions begin at $17. You can join now, hogsillustrated.com/subscribe, or call 479-684-5509. If you subscribe now, you'll be subscribed in time to get our baseball preview when that is ready. We promised, before we get out of here, we promised a little bit of a women's basketball talk. They lose big to LSU last night. Probably could have been a lot worse than it was. 98-64 was the final. They were down by 49. It just feels like whenever Arkansas plays one of these elite SEC teams, that's probably what it's going to look like this year.
Yeah, and Mike Neighbors said it after the game. Anthony wrote about it on our website. You know, he said they're going to be an underdog in pretty much every game for the rest of the year. It's going to be an uphill battle for them. I mean, a team like LSU that's at the top of the sport is always going to be difficult for almost any team they're going to play. But, I mean, I think even throughout the middle of the SEC, I think they're going to have a hard time. I think it's going to be very difficult. And it's a bummer because I think Izzy Higginbottom is great. I think she's really fun to watch. I think she gives them a better chance, but it is so hard with the way that the SEC is, and you know, they were picked last, and you know, I think it's kind of them and Missouri kind of down at the bottom. When they play, it'll be kind of a battle for, you know, best of the worst, I guess. And, you know, it's hard with that LSU team. It was hard with Jersey Wolfenbarger coming back, you know, after everything that happened there. But, yeah, it was not the showing you wanted, but it was a tough ask in an SEC opener.
Wolfenbarger got off to a great start in that game last night, and then there wasn't a whole lot
pretty
after
quiet.
The first quarter for her. But they're going to see this a lot, especially here early in the conference season, because they got a former player at Tennessee, they got a former player at Auburn, they got a former player at South Carolina who doesn't play as much on that roster. But, you know, whether it be because they had disagreements with the coaching staff, whether I think a lot of it might have to do with NIL. Mm-hmm. It looks like there's just not a lot of NIL there for Arkansas women's basketball. Whatever the case might be, whenever you play your old team, it's going to bring something out of you, and it's probably going to bring something out of your new teammates, you know, so long as you don't have locker room issues in your new place, that they're going to want to play hard so you can, you know, kind of stick it to your old team, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's always kind of in there whenever, you know, players play their former team. Sometimes, you know, every time a player is playing their former team, we ask about it, you know, how do you feel? Is it any extra motivation? And sometimes they'll just say,
like
no,
Jonas
it's like
Hader
any
this week.
Exactly. It's like sometimes, you know, a lot of times they'll say, like, it's like any other game or whatever. But, you know, there's always a little something. Even if you left very amicably, even if you left and you had a great relationship, I feel like you still want to beat them a little bit extra.
Quick football note, Anton Junkaj has declared for the NFL draft. He did have another season available to him with the Razorbacks as part of that Diego Pavia ruling, but he's not going to return to Arkansas next year. So that's a note that came out while we were recording that this morning. You can read more on that on our website, wholehogsports.com. Ethan Westerman has reported on that this morning. We appreciate you being with us. Hope you have a great weekend. We'll see you again on Monday. Hope that we see you this weekend at our website, wholehogsports.com.